One day closer to the Baton Rouge Regional. We'll get a preview of the series with the four teams. The NBA playoffs begin tomorrow. Is it Steph Curry's time, or will the Toronto opportunity seize it with Kawhi Leonard? The latest from Sandestin in the SEC meetings, and much, much more. Come on, and it's Wednesday. Let's roll. Today, May 29th, 2019.
Swinging a high drive to left. Way back. Taylor's at the warning track. He's at the wall. It's gone! A grand slam! Michael Conforto to the opposite field. And the Mets have opened up a 6-2 lead here in the seventh.
The conference on the mound is over. Now the pitch to Dietrich, and he swings and barrels another one to right, and this one's gone. Three for Derek Dietrich, and all three are two-run home runs.
First pitch, and Bregman shoots this one out into right center field. Going back on it is Hayward at the wall. He leaps. It's gone. Second home run for Bregman. And the Astros back on top. It's 8-6.
How hot has Alex Bregman been in the month of May? 12 home runs, the most ever by a Houston Astro in a month? Way to go. Worthy of that salary increase and that contract extension. How about that? Astros on fire. It's going to be a great season. Welcome, boys and girls, men and women, and everyone. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. It's great to be with you. My main man, CD, back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios. On the campus of Delta Media, we are your home and your source for LSU sports, your source for Houston Astros baseball, and your number one sports authority in Acadiana. That kind of sums it all up. It's great to be with you. Thanks for making us a part of your day. We got a busy day planned for you and yours. More feedback on the Will Wade scenario, the national people. Some people just have it out for the LSU basketball coach. And I can understand. Will Wade put himself out there, and he said basically nothing. But under the pretense of, look, I told everything to LSU and the NCAA, and therefore I have been reinstated. I am the basketball coach, and we're going to rebuild trust. We're going to still recruit aggressively. We're going to do things the right way. And I gave my commitment to LSU by agreeing to the terms of my amended contract, where he gave up a lot of money and gave up a lot of things, a lot of rights. But it was like LSU said, look, dude, take it or leave it. Take it or leave it. This is it. This is what we have to do. Now, you can either accept it and be our basketball coach or not accept it, and we'll show you the door and we'll find somebody else. That's basically it in a nutshell. It's like your parent telling you, look, I've got to take away, you did this wrong. I got to take your phone away from you for a week. Either you like it or you don't. And if you don't like it, I'll take your phone away forever. Plain and simple. So it's time to move on from that, and move on we shall. But Billy Embody will join us from 247 Sports to talk about Will Wade, to talk about, hey, LSU football. It seems like CBS has come out with their time slots for the college football season. Their first games will be September 14th, Alabama at South Carolina. Ooh, ho-hum. And when LSU and Alabama meet on November the 9th, the time slot calls for a 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central time game. So if that holds up, that'll be the first time LSU and Alabama haven't played at night since the game of the century, quite some time ago. So, we'll see. There's, you know, Television networks, like anything else, always subject to change. The NBA Finals are upon us. Tomorrow will be game one in the NBA Finals. Doc Rivers came out and said that Kawhi Leonard is the nearest thing we've seen to Michael Jordan. I think because he shoots in the mid-range game and he plays defense and he's got big, big hands. Anyway, I don't see any Scottie Pippen next to Kawhi Leonard. But here's Kawhi Leonard talking about, look, I'm not focused on anything. Cut number two. I'm not focused on free agency. I'm focused on this opportunity that starts tomorrow.
Once this is over, it's still between the lines. We're still playing basketball. We have a scheme. Just focus on that and don't focus on our outside attention. And, you know, we know what we need to do. You're inside this locker room every day, so don't pay attention to people who are not in your locker room.
Kawhi Leonard has been outstanding. Equally as outstanding has been Steph Curry without Kevin Durant on the floor. He has Vegas's choice to be the MVP of the finals. Steph, cut one. Not worried about that at all.
And the positions that we are in, that's just nitpicking at the end of the day if I really want to cause a hissy fit about not winning a finals MVP with all that we've experienced and all the highs that we've been to. So when he won the last two, he deserved both of them. He played amazing, such consistent basketball at a high level. Do I feel like we win a championship without myself or what Draymond did or Andre did? No. Like I said, everybody has a part in what we do, and whoever wins it this year, it's the same vibe.
Same vibe. What about the two-time defending NBA Finals MVP? He's not playing in game one. His head coach, Steve Kerr, talked about the availability of Kevin Durant.
KD's not playing game one. I think we already announced that, and we'll see where it goes from here. This is where, you know, the fact that there's a lot of days in between games during the finals helps us, so we'll see.
We shall see. Game one tomorrow. Let me tell you what's on the guest list today. Billy Embody of Go247 Sports will join us in about 6 or 7 minutes. Then we'll go to Alec Box Stadium. Ben McDonald, the former Tiger, current broadcaster. He will be calling all of the Baton Rouge regional games on television. Ben will share his thoughts first on LSU's run in the SEC tournament, what they do with their pitching staff, and who's going to present the biggest problems to LSU starting Thursday. Again, game one for LSU will be Friday night, 6 p.m. start against Stony Brook. We'll have the pregame show right here on 103.7 The Game beginning at 5:30. In hour number two, we always begin with our Hot Topic segment. Producer extraordinaire Clint Domain, CD, will join us for that. No telling where what road he'll take us down today. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. The SEC has hired an accounting firm to review officiating in the SEC. I've got to get his opinion on that one. And then Grant Hughes of Bleacher Report, our NBA expert, will share his thoughts on the NBA Finals, the fire sale that appears to be available with the Houston Rockets, and AD and the Pelicans meeting today, the dysfunction taking place with the Lakers. That's got to be an advantage for the Pelicans. Got to be. We'll discuss that with him and much, much more. We're presented each and every day by ShopRite, Tobacco Plus discount outlets, with about 59 of them in southern and central Louisiana. They've got everything for your travel needs. And even if you aren't traveling out of town, it's like a supermarket within a convenience store. It's got everything you want that you could possibly think of on the face of the earth. It's got everything. And believe it or not, just neat, clean, fresh. Just a fun place to go to. My favorite is in Doosan. It is a fabulous, fabulous, well worth the trip just to go walk in and see what they have. It's really fabulous. I say it every day and I mean it. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. You just can't. ShopRite, Tobacco Plus, discount outlets. We'll take our first time out of the day. We'll get the latest lowdown on recruiting, spring Football training is about to get started again. Monday, summer session. All the recruits are in. The freshmen are in, ready to roll. It's time to lift, time to run, time to learn. And 2019 could be a remarkable season for LSU football. Plus more with Billy Embody of Go247 Sports next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
All right, time to spend 10 good minutes with our good friend Billy Embody of Go247 Sports. Billy, good afternoon, man. What's happening?
Oh, not too much, Jordy. How are you?
I'm fine. I don't believe not too much. You're lying to me. You're lying like a rug. There's always something going on, including what seems like for the first time in many, many a moon since the game of the century in 2011, it looks like LSU and Alabama won't play a night game on CBS. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's good to mix it up. I really do. I think it's been something that, especially as, for LSU, it's been bad news pretty much every time as of late they've played Alabama. It's nice to mix it up, get a fresh time slot, get a fresh look at the game, and it'll be interesting. It's in Tuscaloosa, so we'll see what they do next year. But I would imagine next year it's probably back to that night time slot in Tiger Stadium.
All right, LSU hosted one of the top offensive tackles in the country, 5-star Paris Johnson Jr. It's tough to get kids from that part of the world away from Ohio State and company, but how did his trip go, and what are you hearing?
It went really well. I mean, I would say they're right in the mix to get him. I mean, it's going to be a long process that goes all the way to when he signs his national letter of intent, but he's committed to Ohio State right now. He's a top 10 overall prospect, number one offensive tackle in the country, and he's going to go back and officially visit Columbus later this summer. And I'm sure they'll be rolling out the red carpet just like LSU did on his visit. He took in Bayou Country Superfest in Tiger Stadium, so he got a different look at that. And they had him with Joe Burrow, an Ohio native, the entire time. So they're pushing that aspect of it. But, look, I mean, Ohio State's got him committed, and they're in a really good spot for him. But LSU and Georgia, for that matter, are both fighting for him as well.
Just the fact that LSU's going to that part of the world and not afraid to go up against an Ohio State tells me an awful lot about the confidence that this staff has in their ability to recruit anybody. And I for one, love it.
Right, absolutely. I mean, they've been showing that in this cycle more than anything, is that they want to go against the best. And that's really how LSU should always approach their recruiting and take it nationally and play your connections and get kids on campus and let them experience it and see how things go. And this is just the latest example of it, but they really did. They knocked it out of the park, I felt.
LSU basketball, we're talking with Billy Embody, Go247 Sports. Much as we mostly expected, just Naz Reid and Tremont Waters are gone. Everybody else is coming back, Skylar Mays and Emmett Williams and Marlon Taylor and Javonte Smart. You've got that plus, Watford coming into town. They still need another big or two. What are you hearing on the LSU basketball recruiting front of late?
It's pretty quiet, but I expect them to get a 7-footer out of the junior college ranks at some point. I've heard a lot of buzz around that being the plan. They've got a couple options that they're really looking at, but it's been fairly quiet. I mean, I could see it being pretty similar to kind of how Marlon Taylor and Cortez Cooper got into the fold last year, where you just see an announcement that they've signed and that they're part of the class and things like that. So I think that's kind of what you should expect at this point. But I have talked to a few junior college coaches and people around the junior college ranks, and they feel like the few that they're targeting will be good ones.
Very good. LSU basketball shouldn't skip a beat, I don't think. I think Watford's good enough to be an impact player from day one, and you get all these other players back. I thought the Skylar Mays return was so critical. I think LSU basketball is ready to pick up where they left off of. How about you?
I agree. I think it's just going to be a different-looking team. They've got different pieces. It's going to fit together differently, which will be interesting to watch. Yeah, I mean, when you go from a point guard like Tremont Waters to a point guard like Javonte Smart, yeah. it's just a different dynamic, different aspect.
Right.
And then, you know, it looks like they're going to have, in a way, just a different-looking front line. And, you know, you add Watford. He's not a rim protector. And, you know, while I think they end up getting a rim protector for sure, you know, true seven-footer, it's going to just allow them to play differently. So they have the talent. They now have the experience. And I think that's a little underrated. And, you know, look, this conference is not easy, but they're going to be right in the thick of it again, I would imagine.
I'm with you, guys. I got to get some outside shooting in this thing. Guys got to get better from that. If they do that, I think they'll be A-OK. Will Wade met with the media for the first time. What was your impression of the Will Wade that we saw yesterday in Destin, Florida?
I thought he was really good. I thought he was definitely, you could tell, remorseful. That was something that
yes.
you know, really looked like that was pushed home and pushed hard is that, look, I mean, he's made mistakes and he's working on ways to address those and not have them happen again. And I thought he handled the questions exactly how I would have expected them to, which is to be honest, just not talk about it for the most part. So he did that, and just really they're just trying to look forward in the future now. Now that it's kind of behind them, I don't anticipate, you know, this trial coming up. I don't think the FBI is going to go back and start to hunt more names down and, you know, really make a push mm-hmm. for that because mm-hmm. they just didn't end up getting what they wanted out of this, I think, because it was supposed to be a rather large contingent of coaches and shoe executives and things
right.
like that. But so I don't think they're going to go after it too much. And with that, I would think they just start moving forward with the program. I mean, we're supposed to get Coach Wade later today, if meetings don't run long, to just actually get back to talking basketball and this roster and, you know, his plan for the future. So I think that's what they're trying to do.
Got to fill a coaching position as well. Have you heard anything along those fronts to replace Tony Benford?
Yeah, I think you see that figured out relatively soon here. I really do. Whether it be towards the end of this week or into next week, I think they get that figured out pretty shortly. I think the name will probably surprise some folks, but you know, I've heard a few different options, but I do think it'll be more of a surprise.
Give us an option. Give us an option you've heard.
Oh, Jordy. I can't get into that. I can't. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. So it'll be a surprise, which tells me it's probably a big-name coach and somebody will recognize. So we'll see. Well, maybe Ty Lue doesn't want – he doesn't want to be an assistant in the NBA. Maybe he'll be an assistant at LSU. How about that for a surprise? That would be a good one. Anyway, all right, so what is your biggest take – go ahead.
No, you're right. You're right. There you go.
There you go. Ty Lue, Billy Embody breaks the story. Now, your biggest takeaway so far of the SEC meetings in Destin, anything of significance?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a potential vote on alcohol in stadiums. I mean, it seems like all the the coaches don't really care about it too much, but they feel like it would help. But athletic directors, for the most part, are in favor for it. And as these presidents get ready to meet on it, I mean, they're going to hear pitches and hear the push for it, and it could help. I don't think it's going to help attendance that much. That's been a hot button topic from this week, but
yeah.
The sale in alcohol stadiums stadium-wide is something that's been a huge topic here, and the transfer portal as well. There's got to be some more, I think, guidance, regulation, and discussions on how that looks going forward, because right now, especially in football, there's 400 players that aren't going to have a home next year because they opted to go into the portal, and that's a problem. And there's some things that the NCAA will have to do right away. I think having more, like if a player enters the transfer portal, you get one of your initial counters back. Because right now, for example, LSU signed a full class of 25, so they can't take a transfer. And so that that takes away spots. And there's a lot of schools that sign 25 players. So there's a lot of work to be done on that thing, and that's something that they're going to be discussing as well.
The only way you improve attendance is you get away with these rent-a-win games and you schedule better teams. That's the only way to do it. It's not going to be alcohol sales. They just want to see good teams and good games. But coaches aren't going to go for that. I understand they need to get as many wins as they can to protect their jobs. But that's the only way you improve attendance, because there's never a problem when LSU plays Georgia or Auburn or Florida or Alabama. It's when they play the other teams, when people just don't show up and then they leave early. But anyway, that's just my two cents worth. Billy, I know you're busy. Go have fun at the SEC meetings and catch some sun for me when you get the chance, all right?
No, will do, my man. Thanks for having me.
All right, Billy. Thank you so much. Billy Embody, go to 47 Sports. And again, you know, some people just look. Either you like the coach or you don't like the coach. And there's some media people out there that just don't like Will Wade, and some people do. Look, he's our basketball coach, so I like him. He's a good coach. And until proven guilty, in my book, he is innocent. And that's the way I would treat anyone, not just LSU's basketball coach. Everybody can have that perception and try to read between the tea leaves, and I'm certainly one of them as well. But, hey, they did all their work. LSU and the NCAA were in the meeting room. He talked. They listened. They talked. He listened. And now he's back as the coach. So he must have said the right things. Okay? He must have said the right things. And so, therefore, unless something else pops up, let's move on. Let us move on. Later on, you'll hear about a second chance that I never thought ever would happen, but it certainly has. So we'll deal with that shortly. But next up, LSU baseball hosting a regional. It seems like a rite of summer. It just does. And Ben McDonald will share his thoughts on the Baton Rouge Regional. LSU, Arizona State, Southern Miss, Stony Brook. Next, here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. All that other garbage, the regular season SEC tournament, that's all fine and dandy. But now the season begins. It's NCAA tournament time, and this Friday, the Baton Rouge Regional begins with Arizona State and Southern Miss facing off at noon, followed by LSU versus Stony Brook at 6 o'clock. And to call all the games on television is our good friend, former LSU All-American, and just a great guy, Ben McDonald. Ben, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Man, I'm doing fine. Jordy, how about yourself?
Terrific. I just have to compliment you. I thought the coverage on the SEC network of the SEC tournament, look, the games make the broadcast. There's no question about that. The games were terrific, and you guys were equally terrific. Job well done, my friend.
I appreciate that, Jordy. Yeah, I mean, it was the games, really. It wasn't us, you know. I mean, we set all kind of records. We had 5 walk-off victories in that tournament, as you know, and that was an all-time record. We had, 13 one-run games or 6 one-run games, 13-2. I mean, it was just record after record, including the 17-inning game against LSU at Mississippi State, which set all kind of records as far as length and innings, too. So, all in all, no rain out in Hoover, which was the first time I can ever remember. The weather was unbelievably nice, and so it was a good tournament. It was a good tournament with a bunch of really good teams that fought for a lot of different reasons to get into the tournament, to be a national seed, to host like LSU and Ole Miss did. So all in all, it was a really good tournament.
It was a heck of a night. You've seen many more baseball games than I have and certainly played in them. Never seen a finish like LSU-Auburn. Never seen that before.
No, you're right. I mean, I had the luxury of visiting, or our honor, I guess, to visit with Ron Polk, you know, and Ron Polk has coached and managed I don't know how many thousands of games, and Paul Maneri, too. And I asked both of them, have you ever seen anything remotely close to that? And both of them said, not even close. Like, that's one of those things. And to me, George, that's what makes baseball a great game. You could really see something every time you watch a game that you've never seen before. And I promise you, I might call another 1,000 games, and you might watch another 5,000 games, but we might have ever seen anything like that again.
Yeah, right. All right, so that's all in the books. LSU did what it had to do to get to where they are now, and they're hosting, and we've got four teams in this thing. I talked to a national baseball writer, said the Baton Rouge Regional is one of the, if not the, toughest regional out there with the four teams that are in it. Your thoughts heading into it?
Well, I don't disagree with that. I mean, you're talking about four programs that have all been to the College World Series in the last 10 years. That speaks volumes right away. So everybody has been there before. That it's not new to their programs, you know, and so everybody has some confidence level. You know, if you start with Arizona State, you know about them. They're very physical. They're very offensive. There's a couple of guys, Spencer Torkelson and, of course, Hunter Bishop, that are having an outstanding year, both of them over 20 home runs. Bishop could be a top 10 pick, should be this year. Torkelson will be next year if he's just a sophomore. Of course, they lead the entire country with 92 home runs. It's a big offense. It averages 8.5 runs a game. So that'll be a handful for anybody who plays them, especially, as you know, at the box this time of year, the ball really starts jumping. Yeah. The good news about Arizona State, if you're playing them, is the pitching staff is not great. They're solid, but they're not great. So there's going to be some runs scored in this thing. Stony Brook, you know about them. I mean, they came in here in 2012 and knocked off LSU to go to the College World Series. Now, having said that, I don't think it's that kind of team. Everybody forgets when they say Stony Brook, and it was an upset. Don't get me wrong, but don't forget, Stony Brook had more talent than what LSU had.
No doubt.
They had seven players drafted, five of which were drafted in the top 10 rounds, including a number one, you know, first round outfielder as well that's in the big leagues right now. And so they had a really talented team that time around. Now, this team is talented as well, not that kind of talent, but they're talented and they really rely on their pitching staff. But the pitching staff is not as strong as it was. Now, the defense is off the charts. They really play defense. They're the best defending team in this thing. So that's what you'll look for from them. And then, of course,
I think,
on the back
Ben,
end of everything,
I think,
go ahead.
I think Southern Miss is what makes this the toughest. That's a tough three seed. They're good.
Oh, no. Look, for a three seed, they very well could have been a two seed, you know, but they won their conference tournament. They go 4-0 in their conference tournament to get into the NCAA playoff. Most people felt like they would not get in without winning that tournament. They do so. And again, it's a team that's got a lot of experience. Matt Waldner, you're going to love him. I mean, he's the big center fielder for them. He's 6'5", 220 pounds, and he can really run. He's got 21 home runs. He can go, and he's going to be a first-rounder this year as well. And so it's a good team. Now I'm looking at Southern Miss's numbers. They always have a real ace, a real number one. They still have one again this year, but not quite as dominant as Sandlin was last year, year before last for them. So they're solid, too, but they're coming off a big-time victory in that Conference USA tournament, and they're running with a lot of confidence right now. So this is going to be, I'm telling you, this is going to be as good a regional you'll see anywhere around the country.
I'm with you. Ben McDonald will be doing the ball games this weekend, the Baton Rouge Regional. LSU pitching. Paul Maneri said he'd make a decision quickly how he goes with this, but he wouldn't make any announcement until Thursday. Who's the ace of this team? Is it Cole Henry, Landon Marceau, or Eric Walker? Who's the guy you go to?
Well, I mean, if you talk about experience, you got to lean on Eric Walker, right? I mean, he's been pitching the College World Series. He's been around a little bit longer. If you go to the guy that may be pitching the best right now, very well might be Marceau, you know.
Yeah.
And he has really turned the corner his last three or four times out, have been very solid as well. Cole Henry, you know, the results weren't good in the SEC tournament, obviously, but the arm looked healthy. He looked healthy. You just wonder, he just needs some reps maybe to kind of get going. So if everybody's available and everybody's on their regular, you know, rotation, it wouldn't be surprising me to see Walker go first and Marceau go second, you know.
Okay.
I think is what they're going to do. But remember, with these starters and the bullpen being fresh where it is right now, Paul Maneri can really shorten the games and just get four or five out of his starters, and he can finish the game with those relievers from there. And the relievers really picked it up, as you know, in the SEC tournament. They looked a lot better and pitched well. So I think LSU's in a pretty good place right now, really good.
You mentioned this time of the year, the ball really jumps out because of the heat, the humidity. So against, if you're fortunate enough to beat Stony Brook. And let's say Arizona State takes care of Southern Miss, and that sets you up in the winner's bracket in this thing against a team that hits more home runs than anybody. How do you approach pitching a team like that?
Well, look, it's going to be tough because, you know, they can really hit. When you talk about Arizona State, they can hit top to bottom. I mean, the middle part of that lineup is what scares you with Torkelson, and we mentioned Bishop. Now, Javier is having an outstanding year, too. He's got 13 homers. So you got, you know, double-digit home runs right there, three in a row. So I think you pitch around guys whenever you can. You try to get some matchups along the way. But, I mean, the key for this is you're going to have to score a run. That's the bottom line, because I don't think you shut out an Arizona State squad. I just don't think you do. I think you're lucky if you play nine innings and you give up four or five against them. So I think you're going to – the key for LSU is offense. They're going to have to score some runs as well. And the good news from LSU from a defensive standpoint, you know, we've had trouble throwing out runners, as you know, but none of these three teams really steal a ton of bases. And so LSU caught a break in the fact that – some of these teams just don't run all that much because they can really bang it like Arizona State can. And so they might not put pressure on LSU by running some bases, although I think they're going to test them from time to time.
Ben McDonald joining us. Pulmonary announced that Trent Vetmeyer is ready to return to action, but not such good news on Jaden Hill and Nick Storrs, who are out for the remainder of the season. What does Vetmeyer provide other than depth?
Well, I mean, depth is the main part of what LSU needs right now. If you go back to Vetmeyer last year, he was really good at the beginning and fell out of favor. This year, he's been really good pretty much the whole year long. He's grown up a lot and a little bit different breaking ball, that cut fastball that he's throwing now has been a difference maker. He's kind of been one of the bridges to kind of bridge it, you know, from starter to the back end of that bullpen on whatever closer Paul Maneri is going to use or however how he sets it up. But he's a guy that you can bring in and, you know, runners on base and two out. He's got a lot of experience. And so the fact he had a bullpen, I think, yesterday or the day before, he felt outstanding. He's going to be a big help to that bullpen for sure.
LSU, if they're fortunate enough to win this series, they're matched up with the winner of the Georgia-Athens regional. Those two teams, if the two SEC teams survive in advance, like many people believe, Paul Maneri said it was one of the more evenly played SEC series he could remember. Georgia did win two out of three at home. Those three games were decided by two runs or fewer. Anything can happen, right?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, look, you know, Zach Hess out through Emerson Hancock won the nothing on Friday night. I think it was a one-run game in game two. The Georgia blew out LSU there in game three. And when you talk about Georgia, you talk about pitching. The offense to me for Georgia is average. It's an average SEC offense. It can put some runs on you, but it's not the Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Ole Miss type offenses that you're used to seeing. It's a solid veteran offense, but the pitching staff is just, I mean, as good as you'll see anywhere in the entire country. The pitching staff, Emerson Hancock, likely to be the first pick in the country next year. He's just a sophomore. Mm-hmm. You know, Cole Wilcox is in there. He was up to 100 miles an hour several times this year. He's their freshman, kind of number three guy, you know. And if C.J. Smith got hurt, their number two guy along the way. But Tony Losey has stepped into that role. He's been their three guy. Now he's their two guy. And look, he's going to be a third-round pick. So they're very talented when it comes to the arms. And they don't have to score a lot because the pitching staff is so dominant.
I'm not trying to put the cart before the horse, and I'm counting on LSU to take care of their business at home. And then all they have to do is do what you and your team did 30 years and one day to the day when y'all went into College Station, Texas, and fought your way through the loser's bracket and put LSU baseball on its meteoric rise when you won two games at College Station against what many still say is the greatest Texas A&M baseball team ever assembled, and you won two games in one day to advance to the World Series. How about that?
Yeah, somebody put that on Twitter yesterday. I can't believe it's been 30 years ago that that happened. But, yeah, I mean, look, you know, Burtman often calls it that his sixth national title or his first national title, either way you want to look at it. And it was, you know, something we weren't supposed to do. And that's the great thing about baseball, you know, certain things. And they weren't, you know, look, we were good, too. We were on scholarship as well, just like they were. But they were 55 and 5 and averaging over 10 runs a game, and especially at home, they weren't supposed to get beat. But, you know, anything can happen, and winning game one was big for us. And Coach Bourbon said that in his pregame talk. He said, if you guys win game one, we'll win game two. They'll implode, and they kind of did. So that's good memories for us, and I do feel like those were kind of the stepping stones to lead LSU into what become just a dominant, you know, 10 or 15 year span where they won, you know, five national titles in a hurry, you know. So it's baseball season, it's postseason in college baseball, and it doesn't get any better than this time of year.
We had your teammate Pat Garrity on yesterday, the most unlikeliest of heroes. His double in the 11th helped win the second game 5-4, and then A&M comes back to bat, and he looks at Skip and says, you want me to play close to the line? He goes, yeah. And he fields the ball and throws the runner out. So I heard they still hate you over there in College Station, Texas. They don't like you at all.
No, they don't. You know, Jordan, you know the story. I went back there 25 years later. I hadn't stepped foot back on that campus since we beat them in 89. And people don't forget. They still had some choice words for me, you know. But it's all in fun. And, look, it is the way it is. And Pat Garrity, I mean, and look, that's a good point. I mean, if you're going to make a deep run in postseason these days, somebody that you hadn't really counted on, that's not been a big factor for you, is going to have to step up. And there'll be some guys that get some opportunity, whether it's on the mound, whether it's defensively, or whether it's at the plate. And Pat Garrity was that guy for us. You mentioned hardly had 20 at bats, just didn't play very much. But when it mattered the most, because he stayed in the game, he was ready to go, he came up and made a difference both on both sides of the ball, defensively and at the plate.
Yeah, they were feeling really good until Skip went to the bullpen and brought you out on hardly any rest and let you get the last out. Is it true that Skip did the old double switch, took you out, and put you out in left field? Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, the first game, we got up to a pretty good lead, and just in case, because our offense was so explosive, he put me out in left field for the last two innings. So I threw seven, and I went to left field and played the last two innings out in left field, just in case. That they started coming back, I could come back in the ball game, you know. And then,
Did they hit any to you?
They hit me one routine fly ball, just a can of corn, and I caught it and just tossed it in. And so that was my only action out there. But we kind of had this plan, Jordy. The week before, I started taking fly balls and ground balls with the outfielders just in case something like this would happen. And sure enough, it did. And so, you know, Skip, he's always one step ahead of the game. So he said, get your butt out in the outfield and start taking it. I said, what for, coach? He said, just do what I tell you, son. And so I went out there and started catching some fly balls, you know. And so set for a few hours after game one, ended up getting the save in game two. So it was a pretty good day for LSU baseball.
I haven't heard the expression can of corn in many a moon, and I'm wondering whoever came up with that expression and how that emulates catching a fly ball is beyond me, but I'm going to stick with it. Skip was ahead of the curve. They still don't like you, but you know, look, you go on the road, that's the true test of a really, really good team to go under those circumstances and win. And we'll see what circumstances LSU faces. Are you confident, not taking your purple and gold off now, are you confident of their ability to get past this regional and move on?
Well, I'm not as confident as I have been in years past. I'll say that about this LSU team. I mean, it's you know what the numbers are. LSU wins 84% of the time they host postseason baseball and do regionals in Baton Rouge. That's the number right now, is 84%. So, you know, I wouldn't give it quite that high of a number just because this team, for me, Jordy, has not shown the consistency throughout the year. You know, at times it tells you it's one of the top teams in the country and they can beat anybody, but it also at times it tells you that they can also lose to anybody. But Paul Menary and Skip Burton and LSU baseball has always seemed to find magic in Baton Rouge this time of the year. The magic seems to be there for whatever reason. It was there in Hoover again this year. LSU had to go in there, and they had to at least go 2-2. I felt like they were in. Some people said 3-2. They did what they needed to do to be a host site. So I wouldn't bet against the Tigers for sure. I just don't know if it's as high as 84%, but I still think LSU walks out of this thing. I just think it's going to be an absolute battle to get there.
Fair enough. Ben, great job on the broadcast. Keep it up. We'll be listening, watching, and have fun, my friend. Thank you so much, as always.
Anytime, Jordy. Thank you. Take care.
All right, bud. You take care. Ben McDonald joining us, LSU Stony Brook, 6 p.m., 5:30 pregame show right here on your source for LSU sports, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Back with more. Stick around.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. Let's wrap up hour number one with some kind of a summary here of what's been going on. Ed Orgeron says everything is good with cornerback Kelvin Joseph. Remember, he entered that transfer portal. His dad came out and said he ain't going anywhere. Kelvin Joseph came back and said that's not necessarily true, or paraphrasing along those lines. But according to Ed Orgeron, Kelvin Joseph sticking with LSU, everything is good. That is good. You can never get enough of those kind of players at that position. So that's good. Ed Orgeron says it's going to be a hell of a week when Texas A&M plays LSU in Baton Rouge. He was asked the question of, did the way that that game ended last year increase the intensity of the rivalry? And he goes, absolutely. Yes, indeed. Going to be a hell of a week. Plus, LSU went and got the athletic director from A&M to come here. The new athletic director at A&M used to be the athletic director at Ole Miss. And that football coach at A&M tried to get LSU's defensive coordinator, blah, 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 blah. So it is definitely, and they had something, they got smart on this because they put Arkansas as the last game of the regular season. That's not a rivalry game for LSU. This one is, no question about it. CBS has made a major shift in its college football TV schedule. LSU, Alabama, not slotted for prime time. First time since the game of the century in 2011. And that game this year will be in Tuscaloosa, and it'll be, according to all reports, a 2:30 kickoff. So we've got that. The fact that Anthony Davis and Pelicans Vice President David Griffin are meeting today in Los Angeles tells me that the door is not completely shut. It's not wide open to him coming back, but it's not completely shut. David Griffin trying to, here's my advice. We're going to become the new Pelicans. We're going to change our uniforms. We're going to change our entertainment that we have inside the arena. We're going to bring back jazz bands and play live music inside the arena. We're going to change that. It's the new look Pelicans. The new look. We're going to wear Mardi Gras colors. We're going to have a new style, a new flair, a new look. We're going to change everything up because we're a new team, and we want you on it. I don't know if that's going to work. I have no idea. But the way things are going in L.A., man, why would you want to go there? Why would you want to go there? Anyway, good news for LSU basketball. Emmett Williams returned to the basketball program. He is the last of six that went out. Four came back. Naz Reid, Tremont Waters left. They're going to the NBA. Skylar Mays, Devontae Smart, Marlon Taylor, Emmett Williams, all coming back. It's going to be a different look. Tremont Waters is going to be hard to replace. Much more so than Naz Reid. Much more so. But they got something to work with. All right, hour number one's in the books. Coming up, hour number two, Hot Topics, the award-winning Hot Topics. Michael Hugonen, all things college sports. Grant Hughes previewing the NBA Finals and more. This is the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station and your source for LSU sports and the Houston Astros. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Come on back, hour number two, straight ahead.
From the 237 Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. Happy Hump Day Wednesday, May 29th, the year 2019. Hope you're having a fabulous afternoon. Hydrating, staying out of the heat. But thanks for dialing us up here on 103.7 The Game. My main man, CD, back in the 237 Root Studios, firing away. Look, Gerald McCoy has left Baltimore without a deal. Will the Saints have a visit from the big defensive lineman? I say I hope so. I don't know. We shall see. So without further ado, busy day. Let's get right to it with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, my friend.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Ooh, I did myself a flavor this morning with some scrambled eggs, put some Cajun Chef hot sauce all over it. Oh, my goodness. I did myself a flavor. Good afternoon, CD. What's up, buddy?
Not a whole lot, Jordy. That sounds like a pretty good way to start off a Wednesday morning with some Cajun Chef hot sauce on those scrambled eggs, Jordy. You're going to have to try that one day.
But please do. You'll love it.
We got to start things off, though, Jordy, looking at the Astros mentioned during the two-minute drill. Some of the key cogs aren't part of this team. Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, George Springer, all these guys, along with a couple other teams, a few other players currently on the IL, but they're still getting wins. How impressive is that, seeing kind of these young pups that have been toiling away in the farm system get their time to shine here?
Waiting their turn and delivering when it counts. They want to get up into the big club. That's awesome. Just float on the water. Just don't sink. Float. Get your main guns back and be ready to roll when it counts. So that's great news. It just shows you that this isn't a fly-by-night team. Yeah. They took their time. They have built up their farm club. They drafted well, and they're in it for the long run. So, Houston, enjoy the Astros because you've got yourselves a hell of a franchise.
They've got one hell of a franchise, and I think it's going to be a franchise that sticks around for a long time and makes an impact for a long time because of the way things have been set up over the last few years. Their farm system is just phenomenal. And now we're going to jump over to a franchise that hopefully can be on more steady ground as opposed to what it has been in the past, and that is the New Orleans Pelicans, because it looks like AD, he's having a conversation with David Griffin. This is going to be the Shark Tank pitch, if you will, to try and get AD to stick around with the Pels and play with Zion Williamson for at least 1 year. What's the percent chance you have AD sticking around with the Pels?
Oh, man, it's more than it was, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I still don't give it much of a chance. But, look, the fact that they are at least communicating. Anthony Davis and his representative could have said, man, don't waste your time. Don't waste our time. Trade me. I'm out of here. Get what you can. But at least they're meeting, albeit out there on the West Coast in L.A.
Yep.
Doesn't matter. At least they're talking. And when you're talking, there is that possibility, always a possibility. So we'll find out. It won't be much longer.
It won't be much longer until we find out something, Jordy. But, man, I feel like it shouldn't be much longer that we get word about Zion Williamson and an agency that he's going to sign with, because it's weird, Jordy. We have a potential number one pick and has not signed with an agency yet. I believe the deadline has long passed to withdraw your name, but still it's weird to think a guy like that doesn't have an agent at this time.
Let's think about this, all right? As the number one pick, he knows exactly what kind of money he's going to make. The money is already slotted.
Yep.
Okay? He knows he's going to sign a shoe deal with somebody, okay? Somebody. Does he really need an agent right here, right now? I think he needs an agent maybe later. I don't know. It's not like the agent can get him any more money from whatever club, from the Pelicans when they draft him number one, because the NBA sets the rules on that. All the agent can do for him is get him endorsement deals right now. Yeah, I think they're coming anyway. Maybe Zion's of the belief, I don't need to pay an agent 8, 10, 12%, whatever it is. I just keep all the money myself. Maybe that's the direction he's going. I don't know.
Seems like
but
an interesting
if they
way
want
to go about
Zion,
it.
They'll come to him. They'll find him.
Exactly, yeah, Jordy. Yeah, it's amazing. We'll and like I said, you got him not having a shoe. You're talking about the shoe deal. I mean, John Morant's got a shoe deal already with the swoosh. Nike signed one, I believe, yesterday. So definitely a step in the right direction for him. And then I think you see Zion before too long. But we got to talk about a front office that looks ready to burn it down.
Up
right
the ante.
Yeah, up the ante, Jordy. My goodness, the Houston Rockets look like they want to burn down the roster right now, burn it down and blow everything up after missing out on the NBA Finals for a second straight season with the current makeup. And it got me thinking, Jordy, would you be down with Chris Paul making a comeback to New Orleans?
I think he's going to go visit his buddy LeBron and play for the Lakers.
I wouldn't be surprised
he originally
either.
Wanted to until David Stern ixnayed that one. Back in the day, I think, look, the Rockets understand they're not going to win with what they've got right now. They just aren't. They need to do something different, and Daryl Morey is the type of executive that is not afraid to blow it up, do whatever he needs to do to get better talent in the building. The question is, Chris Paul's got about 3 years left at about $100 million of guaranteed money. Chris is like 34 years old, and he's had some injuries. So who wants to bite off that contract? It's not as easy as you think, but LeBron runs the Lakers if he wants one of his banana board boys to come play with him because Wade's retired. Carmelo Anthony's got his 35th birthday today. He ain't going anywhere.
Yep.
So Chris Paul's the only one left. So I think Chris will go to the Lakers, and I think he's a perfect fit for LeBron. I think LeBron's a perfect fit for Chris Paul. I think they'd be great together, but they need so much more.
Exactly. But, man, it just feels like it's the biggest overreaction I've ever heard of because this team probably could wind up being preseason 2020 the favorite with the current makeup and maybe make one little move to get a nice piece in there. I think the Rockets have potential to be the top three team in the league, but they're blowing it up. What is going on in the front office, Jordy? It's about as much of a mess as the Lakers right now.
I think they look at the Warriors and they said, we couldn't beat them with Durant. We couldn't beat them without Durant. We just can't beat them like we are right now. So we got to do something. And remember, their owner is not the most patient guy out there, Mr. Tertitta. So we'll see. All right, there's your Hot Topics for the day. Thank you, CD. Greatly appreciate it. Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, do yourself a flavor. For nearly 90 years, the Biard family doing it right. We'll be back with more of the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. On 103.7 The Game.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Hump day!
Oh, my favorite. Absolutely the best in the business, Michael Huguenin, talking all things college sports. Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Doing quite well.
SEC meetings taking place in Destin, Florida. Not a bad place to go if you want to. And Will Wade had the met with the media for the first time since all the to-do came about with the all the tapes and all that stuff that we still haven't heard yet. But he seemed to be contrite, didn't say admitting to anything, hiding under the veil of, that meeting took place, privacy, confidentiality. What was your take in listening to it?
You're trying to get me in trouble with your listeners. I thought it was a whole lot of nothing, frankly. And I'm still waiting for if what he said on the tape, a strong ass offer is what he said. What exactly does that mean? You and I have been talking about college basketball recruiting for a decade now, and I would argue that if you're an LSU fan, if you're an Arizona fan, if you're a Kansas fan, your opinions are colored by who your coach is. But This looks like another off season where there's a lot of thunder and lightning, but no rain. I don't think any coach is going to lose his job over this. Bruce yeah. Pearl just got a contract extension. Kelvin Sampson, who's been fired twice in the past for NCAA transgressions, still, he was mentioned as a potential candidate for other jobs this off season. It's same old, same old. The assistants bear the brunt. And the head coaches keep on going, even though there certainly appears to be a lot of smoke at LSU, Kansas, and Arizona, and yet those coaches aren't going anywhere. And indeed, Arizona looks like it's going to have another really good recruiting class.
He is Michael Hugenin. We're getting closer and closer to college football because the SEC and CBS announced some of their early games already. They're going to skip the first 2 weeks of the regular season. And their first broadcast will be September 14th, Alabama at South Carolina. More significantly, LSU and Alabama meet on November the 9th, and the SEC Game of the Week, according to this report, is at 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central, meaning for the first time since I can't remember when, it may be LSU versus Alabama, not in a primetime night game.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody, yeah, you're right. It's the early season TV listings are extremely interesting. I still wonder, though, that there are weekends where CBS has two games one day, one night. I'm still not 100% convinced LSU Alabama is a day game. Maybe it's going to be. That's a little bit bizarre to me. South Carolina, Alabama. I'll be honest, I don't care. That's not a very interesting game, I don't think. Clemson Syracuse is already being announced as a nighttime national game on ABC that same weekend that Alabama's playing South Carolina. If Alabama, South Carolina, and Clemson, I know Clemson Syracuse, I know Syracuse almost beat them last year. Syracuse won 10 games, but come on. If those are the two best games that weekend, that's going to be a pretty sorry weekend of football.
More news from the Southeastern Conference. Apparently, they've hired an international accounting firm to conduct a review of its football officiating.
Official.
I thought accountants juggled numbers. What
numbers,
is that all
yeah.
about?
I'm extremely interested in reading as much as I can about that. I guess the group is Deloitte. It used to be Deloitte Haskins itself. I thought now it's just Deloitte.
Right.
You sort of do wonder how a accounting firm, what exactly are they looking at? I guess you got to give the SEC credit. Okay, we know there's concerns about officiating, so let's look into it. But, yeah, I'm not sure what an accounting firm can find. And I think the biggest issue with college football officiating, as you and I have discussed numerous times, there is no uniform – the rules are supposed to be the rules.
Uh-huh.
And yet there's a lot of gray area seemingly on both sides. You know, we've both talked about how you can watch an SEC game at noon, an SEC game at 3:30, and then an SEC game at 7:30, and there will be a targeting call on each one. And each one
yes.
is a little bit different. You're like, what's going on? So not only is there no uniformity with targeting nationally, I would argue that there's no uniformity intra-conference either. And I think that's the thing that has to be fixed. And I think the SEC realizes if there's a perception that your officiating is bad,
mm-hmm.
well, you have to fix that perception. You have to do something to get people off that. Maybe it's hiring better refs. Maybe it's being more transparent. Maybe it's making officials available to speak to the media in some respect. Maybe it's admitting bad calls. Yes, the officiating crew in the LSU-Mississippi State game made an egregious error, so egregious, in fact, that they're being suspended for a week, something like that. I think more transparency would be a good thing for college football, for the SEC. But, again, yeah, I saw the story about the SEC hires. I'm like, an accounting firm? What's going on here? So this is interesting, yeah.
I need to read more on that. We always talk about if you're being talked about at this time of the year in sports, it's always bad news. And and with a heavy heart. We lost a good one in Rod Bramlett, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, and his wife in a car accident. Just tragic. Tragic news, and everyone remembers his kick six call to win the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're not, I think there are certain announcers, even if you're not a fan of that team, you know who they are.
Yes.
And you knew who Rod Bramlett was. And I got some family friends who are longtime Auburn fans. And I think his name was pronounced Jim Fife, the old Auburn announcer.
Yes.
And people were like, oh, you can't replace Jim Fife. And then, oh, my God, Rod Bramlett did a great job replacing Jim Fife. So, and I think there are certain schools, certainly in the SEC area, I think upper Midwest, if you're an Ohio State and Michigan fan, an Iowa fan, you become friends with the play-by-play guy, even though you never met him or ever.
Right.
Their voice is in your house, on your radio, in your car, so often across all sports that you feel like you know them. And I think if you're an Auburn fan, you know, I would imagine 99% of Auburn fans never met Rod Bramlett. But my assumption is every single Auburn fan was impacted by his death. And you know, it's one thing to be 85 years old and move on. The way in which he and his wife died, you know, they're in an intersection at 6 o'clock and they get rear-ended. It makes it almost worse in some respects. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. Michael Huguenin, The Athletic, kind enough to join us. I guess everybody deserves a second chance. I was stunned when I found out that Art Briles has been hired by a Texas high school to coach their football program.
Mind-blowing. And they announced it on a Friday afternoon going into Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.
And then my assumption was they did that on purpose because it's a Friday afternoon announcement on a holiday weekend. It's almost as if they thought, okay, it'll be 3 days of a lot of to-do about it, and then it'll just go away. But obviously it didn't go away. And if you saw some of these people try to explain away this hire, it's
ridiculous.
It makes your head want to explode. And you're right, second chances are fine. I truly, given what the firm hired by Baylor reported what went on at Baylor, I'm not sure if I was a organization involved with young people that I would hire Art Briles. If you want, a CFL team hiring him, the backlash was such that they quickly moved on. But I cannot fathom putting this guy in charge of a group of young men. I'll be honest. You're right. People deserve second chances, but. And I know people say, it was a story. I think the Dallas Morning News did a story. They talked to a bunch of Texas high school coaches who are promised anonymity and all of them. Oh, this is great. Art Briles is a great guy, a great offensive mind. He's going to win a lot of games. And one guy said, well, you know, to me, he was railroaded. One high school in Texas, though, Georgetown, which is a relatively smaller school, their official football Twitter basically came out and said, shame on you, Mel Vernon. And I'm thinking, that would be my reaction. And I'll be honest, if my kid went to Mount Vernon High School, I have a daughter, I'd be, given what went on at Baylor, with his players.
You'd have to think about it.
I can't.
Can you think of a school that's had more? I mean, think about it. I mean, they had the basketball situation. Who was the coach?
Dave Bliss,
and now I can't think of a university's athletic department that's had more uproarious scandal ever.
Right, and it's not these aren't grade academic scandals or something of that nature. You know, Dave Bliss, it's hard to top that. Dave Bliss asked players to lie about a dead teammate. And then along comes the Baylor football situation. And again, I just read the Pepper Hamilton stuff. That's a group that was hired by the school to look into what went on. And, you know, everybody says Art Briles are railroaded. I'll be honest. Given how successful he was at Baylor, they did everything they could to keep him, and yet they could not keep him. So what does that say?
Right.
The athletic director lost his job and somehow got another one. And then turns around and hires Hugh Freeze. It's hard to be it's hard to, not to be cynical about college athletics for a lot of reasons. Yeah. And I'll be honest, most of the reasons to be cynical about college sports center on coaches.
Yep.
And that's that's not a good thing.
Michael Hugan of The Athletic, I'll leave you on this one. One last question. The state of Florida, you've got Florida, Miami, Florida State. I guess Central Florida needs to be included. Rank the schools in order of who you have the most confidence in this year moving forward.
I think UCF's going to win 10 games. I don't know, maybe even 11. I don't think they're going to be quite as good as they were last year or the year before. I still think they're going to win the most games of anyone in the state. Now, are they better than Florida or Miami? I'm not sure they're going to have a better record. I think Florida is better than Miami, and I think Miami is better than FSU. Okay. Don't know where USF fits in there. And the bottom of the power of the big the FBS teams would be FAU, Lane Kiffin. FIU, coached by Butch Davis, is better than FAU. But this is going to be an interesting season in this state. Taggart's under some heat already after one season. USF fans are a little bit antsy about Charlie Strong because recruiting hasn't gone as well as they expected. But, football in Florida is like football in Louisiana. Everyone always expects perfection, and there's always a reason that you don't go 12-0, and it's always the coach's fault. So it's going to be an interesting season in this state, especially in Tallahassee, I think, because I'm not sure how good FSU is going to be.
Spurrier, Bowden, Johnson, back in the day. Back in the day, there was nothing better. Nothing.
Exactly. And the state has fallen a long way. You and I were talking a couple weeks ago. The last time Miami won a national title, this year's high school seniors were not even born.
Wow. That'll wrap it up. Michael Huguenin, The Athletic, you're the best, buddy. Always enjoy talking with you. Next week.
Yep.
All right, you got it. We'll take a quick timeout when we come back. The NBA Finals are upon us. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, talking hoops here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
They're rounding the turn and heading home. The marathon that is the NBA has at most 7 games left in its season. And we'll determine who the best of the best is as the Golden State Warriors from the West will take on the Toronto Raptors of the East, starting with 2 games in Toronto. Grant Hughes is, if you want to know about basketball, if you want to know about the NBA, this is must-read material from Bleacher Report, NBA writer extraordinaire, and our friend of our program, Mr. Grant Hughes, joining us. Grant, are you surprised by the 2 finalists, or at least one of them?
Well, you know, I was kind of caping for the Bucks all year, so I'm a little surprised that the Raptors ended up representing the East, although really after, game 4 of that series when Toronto tied it up, you could kind of see the tie. You could kind of see which way things were going.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously not surprised about the Warriors. The bracket broke pretty well for them, and Houston, didn't put up the challenge that a lot of people thought they would. So, yeah, they were the obvious one. But credit to the Raptors. I think the Raptors 100% deserve to be where they are.
Yeah.
It's a lot. There are going to be a lot of questions for the Bucks to answer, but they've got a summer to figure that stuff out.
Is it unfair? Doc Rivers came out and said that Kawhi Leonard is the closest thing we've seen yet to Michael Jordan. Is that a knock on Kobe Bryant, or do you agree with that?
It depends on what he means by it. I think certainly the way that Leonard sort of moves around the floor, the types of shots that he is really skilled at generating, where he's just physically stronger than his guy and can pull up for, 2-point jumpers, which the whole league hates now, except he's great at them. Those kinds of things, it really does remind you of the way Jordan played, and certainly the two-way play and all that stuff. I think it's a fine comparison to me. I just don't know, if you're just looking at style of play, then sure. And effectiveness recently, sure. But, you know, we did this with LeBron. We did this with Kobe. We do this with anybody that is a really good wing player, you know?
Yeah. Vince Carter, it goes on and on and on and on. Kevin Durant, is he going to play in this series, you think? He doesn't look like – I saw him limping to the plane in some video. It doesn't look like he's even close to being ready.
Yeah, not doing anything, you know, game action-wise in practice yet. I don't know, actually, if he's going to make the trip to Toronto or not. I can't remember which way that's going, but he's not playing game one. I'd be really shocked if he played game two. And you know, if we get to game three or four and when the series is back in Golden State, I'd say if he doesn't play game three, I think he might want to count him out for the series. And, you know, the calf injury is tough. It's just you can't really do anything on it. When you have one, you're constantly – it's never out of your mind if you're trying to plant or run or cut. So it's just going to be better when it's better, and that might be August. You know, for all we know.
Does that now mean that Kawhi Leonard's going to be kind of like a rover on defense? He's going to, if Steph Curry gets hot, he'll guard him. If Klay Thompson gets hot, he'll switch over and guard him. I mean, what do they do with him?
Yeah, certainly, you know, if he's guarding Andre Iguodala, who defenses let shoot threes anyway, when it comes to the Warriors, he really can just kind of play some free safety. And that's a scary thought, although, you know, if the Warriors get desperate and play a lot of pick and roll, I think you'll see Leonard be maybe even on Draymond Green a lot, because when that screen comes up and it's Draymond, then suddenly you've got Leonard switched on to Steph Curry, and there's no advantage there for the Warriors. So he can really diffuse a lot of the stuff the Warriors want to do if he's guarding a less threatening player.
I mean, Kawhi Leonard's done everything he can. I think if he does opt to leave Toronto, they'll give him a standing ovation and say thank you for the 1 year. Do you agree with that?
100%. I mean, it was a really bold trade at the time, it seemed, when they gave up DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl. I think there was a first in there, but since the Raptors are really good, that first hardly matters. But if you think back a little bit, I think Toronto was going to change this team anyway. They needed to get off of DeRozan's contract. And if this hadn't worked out, you know, they would have taken a big swing and kind of started to look at retooling a little bit next season. But it just broke right in every single way. I mean, especially considering when they traded for Leonard, I don't know that anyone was sure that what his health was going to be.
Right.
And he missed all those games with load management. And I think clearly he's not 100% now, but I've also never seen a player – perform better while he's clearly not 100% in my life. Everything really worked well for them. And if he walks, then I don't think anybody's going to be upset about it.
Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report feature writer for the NBA. I've never seen an NBA Finals where the two regarded best players on their team probably won't be playing with their teams next year. And that's Kevin Durant with the Warriors and Kawhi Leonard with the Raptors. I mean, they may, but everybody seems to be thinking they'll be going elsewhere. That's bizarre to me.
It's a really strange dynamic, and you kind of wonder. I would say that normally you'd wonder, well, how's this going to affect the locker room? Is everybody going to look at Kawhi and say, well, he's a short timer, we can't really go to battle with him? Same thing for Durant. But at this point, if you've made it this far, obviously you've got that issue sort of, it's not solved, but everybody on both rosters is sort of at peace with you know, this being a sort of fleeting situation, maybe. So it's really weird. It's really interesting. Certainly, I can't remember it ever happening before, but I don't think it's going to play a role in how the teams perform, if that makes any sense.
I mean, if Durant wins, if they win a third one in a row, I mean, Michael did that twice, but four in a row? Why wouldn't he want to come back and give it one? He's still young. Give it one more run and then go. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, if it's me, I'm sure if it's you, you're still looking at the Knicks situation and thinking, why? Why do I want to, you know, deal with ridiculous ownership, a franchise that has been kind of a laughingstock, even if another star goes there? I don't know. It's just, but, you know, to me, if Durant were going to stay, don't you think somebody connected, somebody well-sourced would have gotten that out of someone by now? You know, you just don't hear – all you hear is Knicks, Knicks, Knicks. You never hear, you know, actually, there's a, you know, it's a coin flip, or Durant's leaning towards the, if he were going to stay, I think we would have just heard a whisper about it by now.
I'm with you. Certainly not a whisper, but it's apparently out there, reports that the Rockets are, and it doesn't surprise me, they're not good enough to be where, to get any further. So they're trying to blow this thing up and make some deals. But Chris Paul, one of the one of those that apparently are out there for the taking, but man, he's got a big contract. Is that a movable contract considering his age?
Yeah, that's the thing. He's in clear decline. He's missed almost 70 games over the last 3 years. And that's just an enormous contract that's going to age even worse. So to me, it takes a desperate team and a team that maybe doesn't, you know, maybe think as logically as a lot of others do. And everybody's going to bring it up. I'm sure everybody already has. But the Lakers seem like a real possibility for that, just because of the LeBron connection,
right?
The way that the Lakers just, they've struck out so badly other than LeBron over the last couple of years in free agency. That's one I'd keep an eye on. But yeah, like if you're just a normal team that's trying to make the playoffs or get to the next level, I just don't know how you justify spending that kind of money on a guy that is clearly on the downside and you can't count on his health, and you're committed forever for another $100 million+.
Things are so crazy in Lakerland. Does LeBron and his Rich Paul go to the Lakers and say, look, just trade me to Houston and you get James Harden and we'll call it even, Steven? I don't know.
I would say, though, just to shift a little bit towards the Anthony Davis and the Pelican stuff.
Yes.
This report from the Lakers about this most recent one by Baxter Holmes on ESPN, that just the total dysfunction that was worse than anybody thought, that's a real positive for the Pelicans, I think.
Yes.
Because, you know, you've got the Celtics not knowing what's going to happen with Kyrie and Davis maybe not wanting to re-sign there. That really just leaves the Knicks. I don't know. To me, the longer this goes on and the worse things you hear about these possible destinations, the better it looks for New Orleans. And David Griffin's meeting with Davis today.
Yeah.
I think I'll be really interested to hear what gets leaked about that. But the fact that there's a meeting at all, I think, is kind of positive for New Orleans.
I'm with you. Channels of communication are open. That is a good thing. And it, again, not to reiterate the last time we talked, but it just seems like things are in a positive direction, and ownership certainly giving the impression that they are willing to spend and do what it takes to get the right people in for the first time, really, since the franchise picked up since the city picked up that team from Charlotte, became the New Orleans Hornets, went through Katrina, went through the George Shinn debacle years and all that. It seems now for the first time there is concrete under that team rather than sand and water that's drifting away with the tide.
Yeah, and you know, just really big picture, I think the fresher that things seem to Davis, or the more different they seem from how they've been in the past, especially last year, sort of the easier it is to sort of sweep all the awkwardness of the trade request under the rug, because you could sort of frame it, or you could rationalize it and say, well, that was that situation that I wanted out of. This situation, this new one, that's different. So maybe I'll give this a shot. And I think Davis still is going to look bad, and there will still be fans that are never going to get over it. But I also think that if the situation is different enough, everyone can sort of talk themselves into this being, you know, almost like he's been traded to a new team, which, you know, it's a rationalization, but I think there's really something to that.
Change the uniforms, change the pregame.
Yeah.
I mean, change everything up and make it seem like it's brand. I'm with you 1,000%. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, NBA feature writer. Back to the finals. This seems to me to be a Steph Curry reincarnation series. For some reason, look, I've never doubted his greatness, and I still think he's one of the top five players in all of basketball because of what he does. But he seems to have been forgotten until of late. You know what I mean? Ever since Durant went out and his game has just gone back to his MVP status, it just seems like this has got Steph Curry written all over it.
I agree, and it's going to have to, I think, for Golden State to win. But I think what we've seen since Durant went down is just that, you know, first of all, Curry, I think, is the most underappreciated superstar maybe we've ever had. And I think what we've learned is that he's been sacrificing, because if he can do this, what he's done these last few games and what he did in his MVP seasons before Durant showed up, I think he could have been doing this all along. And he just, you know, gave up some shots, gave up touches, gave up a role in the offense for Durant, and it really knocked his numbers down a little bit, even though they're still great. And it changed the way the Warriors played. But to see him do this suggests to me that this was there the whole time, and he was just giving it up for the team, which is incredible. I don't know if you could find another two-time MVP, unanimous MVP, which he's the only one of, first of all, a superstar of his caliber that would do that. So it just makes me appreciate what he's done more. And so, yeah, for the Warriors to win the series, he's going to have to win Finals MVP, I think. And that's well within his capabilities.
Why is it that everybody expects a really tight and intense NBA final? Look, Milwaukee, Toronto figured out Giannis. They just packed it in. You can't do that to Golden State. You can't pack it in. They got too many great shooters. And who's Kawhi? If they put Kawhi on Steph Curry, okay, that's great. But he's going to run them all over the place. Maybe that fatigues Kawhi, but who's going to guard Klay Thompson?
Right.
I mean, Lowry can't guard him. Lowry can't guard Steph Curry. So I don't understand. What do you make of this series?
So I do think it'll be a tight one. I think just objectively, I think the Raptors might be the best team the Warriors have faced in the finals. I think defensively, Toronto is really good. I don't know. I think Andre Iguodala is an all-time wing defender. I don't know if he's strong enough to slow Kawhi down. But I do agree that, look, the Bucks were an amazing regular season team, but I think Toronto, you know, they could be solved, and Toronto just solved the Bucks because the Bucks did not make adjustments. Nope. Once you crack that safe, the safe is open. And the Warriors, to me, are kind of the most unsolvable offense we've ever seen, because they don't have a particular offensive identity. They move, they pass, they read and react. They just take what you give them. And they always take a lot of it. And so there will be no moment in this series as there was in Toronto, Milwaukee, where you say, oh, the Raptors have figured it out. I don't know how the Warriors will score. That moment I don't think will happen. So that's why I'm picking the Warriors to win it. But I really do have a lot of respect for Toronto. I think they're deep. They can play big, small. They can put a bunch of wings on the floor. They're just really, really good. But I do think that the Warriors – just have too much offensive firepower and smarts and experience with or without Durant to make it through.
I mean, going back to what was stated earlier about the comparison to Michael Jordan and Kawhi Leonard, I don't see a Scottie Pippen out there. I don't see a Dennis Rodman. I just don't. They got some good players, but I just don't see it.
Yeah. Two, Toronto got great performances from Lowry. Fred VanVleet may have won the series by being caught from three for two games. And certainly, look, the Raptors needed a four bouncer on the rim from Leonard to get to the conference finals in game seven against the Sixers. So, you know, they're not perfect, but I do think they're really good, and they sort of have come together at the right time. I think and I hope we're going to get a really good series. I think six or seven games.
I hope so. I'm concerned about the layover. I mean, Warriors hadn't played in – I can't remember the last time they played.
Yeah, I think they got 9 or 10 days off. I don't think so. I think they needed it because Andre Iguodala had a calf strain. Durant needed time, obviously. I don't think DeMarcus Cousins is going to matter at all, but it looks like he'll be able to play early in the series. So they needed the break. And look, at the rest versus the rust thing, if you're rusty, if rust is an issue for you going into the NBA Finals, I don't know what to tell you. You've got to be up for these games no matter what. And I think the Warriors will be.
Absolutely. All right, one final question. We'll go back to, because of the Pelicans and the nature of where we are, what percentage now, you talked about it, you think it's more of an advantage now than ever for the Pelicans with the dysfunction of what's going on in the Lakers camp and with the unsettledness of what Kyrie Irving's going to do. What percentage do you give of Anthony Davis coming back to New Orleans?
I think, well, I'll frame it this way. I would have had a 0%, you know, as recently as a couple weeks ago. I still think it's probably under 50% just because, you know, we can't forget the last few months, as different as New Orleans is and as exciting as Zion Williamson is and all the great things that are happening. I don't know, it's like, you know, 30, 40% would be my my approximation. But, boy, that's better than zero.
It's a hell of a lot better than what it has been. I'm with you. Grant Hughes, enjoy the NBA Finals, my friend. Thank you so much.
You got it.
All right, buddy, you take care. Grant Hughes, NBA feature writer, Bleacher Report. We'll be back to wrap things up here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helpert Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back, boys and girls. Finishing touches, it was Scott Woodward's day at the dais at the SEC meeting at the SEC meetings in Destin, Florida. He met with the media for roughly 30 minutes, breaking down a whole bunch of topics that were being discussed at the SEC's annual spring meetings. Talked about Will Wade, talked about booze, talked about building relationships, and so much more. We'll delve into that more deeply tomorrow, but Scott Woodward certainly making his feelings known on a variety of topics. All right, let's get to our daily history lesson, as we do each and every day at this time of the day. We go back to May 29th, the year 2010. Oh, what a day it was for one Roy Halladay of the Philadelphia Phillies. The two-time Cy Young Award winner threw a perfect game, 27 up, 27 down, against the Florida Marlins on this day, May 29th, the year 2010. Birthday wishes. Man, if it's your special day, all of us here at 103.7 The Game and everything under the umbrella of Delta Media wishes you the very, very best day ever. Ever. Let's see who you share with the likes of. Happy 35th birthday. I'm still looking for a team because I haven't retired yet. Carmelo Anthony. I'm still looking for a jump shot. I can't make one, and I'm the was the first pick in the NBA draft. Happy birthday, Markel Fultz. And posthumously, two of legendary figures in our country. From the world of entertainment, Bob Hope was born on this day, as was former President John F. Kennedy. So we wish all of you a very, very happy birthday. Yes, indeed. Special thanks to our guest today, Billy Embody of Go247 Sports, Ben McDonald. He'll be on the call of the Baton Rouge Regional on television, Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, and Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, and the NBA. I like Toronto. I just don't see them. Maybe I'm missing something, but I think there's too many weapons for the Golden State Warriors, and I think they're coming in red hot. But it'll be the toughest team they've played in the playoffs to date. There's no question about that. So, CD, thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We have only one Wednesday, May 29th. Make it a great afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
From the 237 Roof Studio.